there, Shopomaniacs. You're listening to Shopatalk Show, podcast all about web design and development. I'm Dave Rupert, and with me is Chris Coyer. Hey, Chris.
Hi, I'm here.
I'm jealous of all your gigging that I see you doing on the socials. You're gigging out, man, gigging out.
Oh, yeah, it got a little heavy for a minute because I started doing, I was hoping to make it like a regular thing at this bar and town with a friend of mine. And then I ended up splitting the set with somebody else so that each person didn't have to have tons of material. I did because I was in both groups. But, you know, if you're playing with somebody, I was playing with one guy who really hadn't done this before. But really wanted to, and he's just this kid, unbelievable singer. It's cool. Like, I don't know if people know this about Dave's wife, but she's like world class. This is amazing. Anyway, you know, but I some people just have it, you know, they can just, their voice just unbelievable. So I was like, I want to play with that guy, you know, but we didn't have 2.5 hours of material, you know? So I was like, why don't we do an hour?
You got 6 songs, right? Yeah.
Why don't we do an hour and I'll fill the other half with, kind of my classic stuff, old time and bluegrass, is easy for me to just be like, you sit in with me. Okay, go, you know.
Right.
That was going, but it turned out to not be super regular. But that's the one I bought all the equipment for and stuff because it's this big room and it just needed a PA. And man, that was a whole journey. But it's kind of locked in now. So rock and roll. I learned what I learned. I found that quite fun. But then I sat in on a bass at this other bar in town with these old time players, which is really my passion kind of music, fiddle and banjo driven stuff, you know, and then filled in with bass and guitar and mandolin here and there and stuff. Really fun. But it's, you know, there's some singing, but it's mostly just strong melody kind of stuff that you clog to. But yeah, I played bass with them and it worked pretty well. And I like grabbed a banjo during a little off thing and I was like, look, I play this too. And they're like, oh, you can do that too, huh? And I was like, yeah. And then I filled in guitar with them one time and that went okay. And then I started playing banjo with them. And now I'm just like in, you know, which is great. So I pretty much play every Wednesday night at this place called The Cellar in Bend. And it's just been really bucket filling for me.
Nice.
Because it's been pushing you forward. You know, it's like, yeah, I don't know, you get in biking with some people who are better bikers than you. It brings you up in your skills. You know, they're like very good players. So it has forced me to get better.
When you have a reason to do something, it's so much better. And maybe that goes back to just build websites, but it's just this, like, if you have a race to run, you sign up for the 5K, you're going to learn how to run, you know, it's that kind of thing, you know?
And whereas if you're like, I should run more, you just won't, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to learn the mandolin. No, you're not.
Whatever. No, you got to like learn it for the show that you're playing in 3 weeks or whatever.
Yeah.
I know like Brad Frost, like Frostapalooza, like Jesse and I have been playing way more music than we would in a given year. Like, we've already eclipsed.
Yeah, Brad's given us a little reason. If you haven't heard of this, folks, this is a public thing that everybody can go to. You probably all know Brad Frost. He's turning 40. He rented a big old, I guess we just had him on the show, right? So we mentioned it then.
Yeah,
so you probably heard of it, but frostapalooza.bradfrost.com. You can buy a ticket and come, and you know, there'll be so many web people there too. It'll be kind of like a de facto conference also, I think.
Yeah. I think there's secret talk about maybe stapling on a conference, but we'll see if that materializes, but could be fun.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah. I'm like, even if it doesn't, it's like kind of will anyway.
Right.
We're all there. It's just common stuff to talk about.
Brad, I guarantee Brad will talk for 30 minutes about design systems. I can guarantee that.
Yeah.
Or Led
Absolutely.
Zeppelin. So, yeah.
You know, as just a couple of little tech thing asides, well, last night I played, we record this on Thursday, I play Wednesday nights. I bought a little thing on Instagram. Guys, I feel like half of the cool stuff I own is some dumb Instagram ad that I'm pulled in by somehow. But good for them, because it seemed like a cool marketing strategy for a little device like this. It's perfect for Instagram. It's called the Audigo instead of Audio, you know, with a little G stuck in there. So what I want is ability to really quickly record audio that's not from the phone camera.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes that's nice to get down a little idea or something. But if you like want halfway decent audio, that the phone microphone's not going to cut it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you want the portability of the phone, though. It's so nice, especially for a gig like we have. Like, what if we want to grab a song because we thought it was really cool, or just, you know, for social media or whatever. So this ought to go. It's like an inch and a half, roughly a cube, a little small little buddy. And it connects to your phone, and then there's dedicated software on the phone that record to it. And what I like about that is I've seen mics for phones that, like, mm-hmm. journalists use and stuff, that you slap it into the little charging hole on the phone, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. then it hangs off of there, which is kind of fine. But, A, usually that's how they're connected only. So mm-hmm. it feels very flimsy and dangerous. And then it's, like, on the butt of your phone. You're like, can it not be on my phone, you know?
Right,
so
right.
So this thing is, you can connect up to four of them that record all at once, which Ooh. Is super cool. Even one of them is cool, but four of them, you know, you can get room sound, you can get, you know, the bass better or whatever you want to do. And then you just hit record and it grabs the audio and it records it locally on itself, which is kind of cool. I think there's adds some stability to the recording.
And that, latency, yeah.
And then when you're done, you have all this post-editing stuff you can do, just light stuff, you know, like add a little reverb or something if it needs it. And then you kind of pull it in, transfer it to your phone. And it does video too, so it syncs the video and the audio, which is just, it's just a really well-done little device.
Oh, wow.
So for a little Instagram ad, I was like pretty pleased with the Audigo thing. Because I've been trying to do that. You know, I'm not that good at it, but I've been showing, like, I'm going to record myself playing guitar, but then I'm going to add a banjo track to it. Then I'll add a bass track to it or something. I just find that stuff, like, ridiculously fun.
Yeah.
That's hard to do. So, like, my step one was, like, I don't know, QuickTime Player, I guess. I'll just point the camera at me and record on my Mac with that. That's kind of fine, but then, like, you have a MP4 file, I guess. And then you're like, what do I do with that? You know?
Oh, and everyone who's watching is just like, why the fuck does the banjo guy have a laptop out? You know, like, it's just like, is he about to go Skrillex or whatever? You know, like, what's about to happen? You know, it's so distracting. Sorry. It would just be like, Truly. What's going on? Yeah.
Yeah, because of course I'm doing it in the computer room instead of somewhere else. So I did that, and then I'd be like, well, I'm just going to drop it in. What do I have? Screen Flow? That's mm-hmm, the only kind of mm-hmm. – I don't have like Final Cut Pro or anything. So I just use that, and I drag the two tracks in there. But then I got to line up the audio, which sucks.
Yeah.
So that sucks. So that was like step one. But also, you're not doing any post-processing on the audio then, and I've been finding – a little bit of hoopity doopity in like GarageBand does a lot
to
improve the sound. I just found out that you can take a video track and drag it onto GarageBand and it will respect that. It will like open a video in GarageBand, but only one.
Yeah.
So you can't drag both videos on there, which sucks. You'd have to do them one at a time or something. I've been trying to figure that out. And then I learned, sure, I can use QuickTime Player to record, but you can use, and I'm sorry if this is so Mac-centric, everybody, but it kind of is. They have this thing, I'm sure there's some Windows way to do it. You can use your phone as the camera, like instead of a webcam, you know? And your phone camera is just so good, you know? But it's also portable, meaning you can put it anywhere in your room and point it at you. So then you're still kind of doing the QuickTime Player recording, but you're getting the better audio. And then I was like, well, I'll just use one of the cool mics I have sitting around for the audio. So I'm getting good video and audio. Hey, go me. You know, I'm still kind of having to line up sound myself, but it was kind of an improvement. So I was like, that's pretty neat. But, you know, locked to the computer still, kind of because of the recording. And now I'm like, ooh, with the Audigo, I could just be anywhere.
Right. Well, that's what I'm thinking. I'm looking at it like, if it does good quality, you know, everyone's going to be like, oh, you got to have this microphone. It's the best one, Nashville or something, you know, like.
Right.
But like, if it does quality that meets like your quality bar, like that's awesome. And if it's like, you can just like put it near you, like you're saying, you're not dragging this phone to pair to your thing to like it just seems simple. I don't know. I've been in the position where like we were like, let's go record, and we have 25-pound buckets of XLR cables to like go do, you know, like
right,
and you're
right,
just
right,
like,
right.
You got 17 drum mics, you got all this, and it's just like, dude, wouldn't it be better if we just put one microphone in the room and hit record? And so
that's
like simple is so valuable to me, I guess is what I'm saying.
Truly,
like,
you know, yeah. I mean, bluegrass bands famously just use one condenser in the middle and then learned dynamics, you know, like whoever was soloing would move in closer. Some people would step back. It's just a cool thing to watch. They still do it to this day, really. And I think that's a neat approach.
Even for Brad's thing, my wife and I have been recording like her vocals just to give like an idea of like what we're bringing to the table, trying to share that. Right. And like, you know, I've got this podcast mic. It's actually not a great singing
mic.
Yeah. Mm. And so like I have XLRs and stuff like that, but then I'd have to get a digital audio interface, and then I'd have to like, you know, and then, but so we're just using the podcast mic. It's fine. It's good enough. But then she's having to like learn GarageBand to like, you know, cut, start, stop tracks, do all this stuff. And like, and it's like, and she's doing it. It's fine. But like, it's, I'm like looking at this, I don't know. I like when it gets simple. It's just like, hey, just talk into this or sing into this or play into this, you know, and then.
So GarageBand is nice if you're just going for all audio or just this one video, I guess, in the case, so that you can get that going and then throw some headphones on, put the scrubber back at the beginning of the song, hit record again, and lay down an additional track on top of it. I mean, of course you can. That's the whole point of this app.
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't have to sync audio because you've recorded it in time with the previous track. Great, yeah. But that's not giving you two video tracks in case that's what you wanted. I know that's a little niche, but GarageBand works great for multi-track. But then, you know, the multiple video thing is tricky. I do like that this Audigo thing that I mentioned, its app has the multi-track recording too. So you can do the same thing as record one, then go back to the beginning, hit record again, and it will output what you've recorded, you know, got to wear headphones so it doesn't pick up that sound again.
Yeah.
But lay down additional tracks and then they're all synced. And that sound syncing stuff is a big deal. It's really janky to have to line up waveforms and try to get lined up. I think that's ridiculous. There is another iPhone app called Acapella that does it too. And you can add lots of tracks of yourself. But they were going for like the social media play. Like, I can grab your song, push you into the corner, and then add more audio to it, which is pretty clever. It's just, I think they haven't nailed their business model because they're like, if that was the real play, I think it would just be free and there would be a ton of it. But it's also like $100 or something.
Oh, really? To do this? Yeah.
Yeah. And you're like, you're not going to get a community thriving with that kind $100 of barrier entry, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, they should just market it to people like us, like dads who aren't in bands.
Oh, I love it. I used like the free trial and then I just couldn't swallow the cost, which is crazy because I spend money on all kinds of dumb stuff, but it's only subscription and I'm like, oh, it's just not good enough just for that. And there's no Mac app, and I normally like doing this kind of work on a bigger screen and whatever. I just couldn't buy it. Anyway, too many words on that, but the Audigo device is pretty cool. I imagine it'd be great for podcasting at a conference. Bring that. It's the high quality mic. And the fact that it doesn't physically connect to your phone is sick.
Well, I was just thinking about my wife. I had some friends who are like, we want to start a podcast, Dave, how do we do it? And I was like, Rode Podcaster Go, 4 Heil PR40s, you know, like I'm just like, or a Yeti Blue, you know, like, and I'm just like, oh man, I don't have a good like answer, you know, and this is the first one I'd be like, maybe just try this. And if you hate it, get another one and then do both sides of the table or whatever, you know. Because I think they were literally like, we want to go to a restaurant and just talk and record
it. This is the answer. Because, any real microphone-shaped microphone isn't going to work then.
No.
You're not going to be the idiot holding the mic to your mouth at a restaurant.
No. So I think you just need some sort of ambient thing that's like good at nuking background sounds.
So, yeah, that's going to be tricky too. Because you'd like to, I don't know. It's like have them put you in the corner booth or something, because you can post-process some of that, but you'd rather not get it at all.
Yeah. No, this just seems like the GoPro, maybe that's the wordplay they're going for, Audigo, but the GoPro for audio, right? Just like a little cube that just records it all, you know? So.
Yeah. And it does, it has a, so that, you know, directionally it has a, it's front facing. So you face it right at yourself and it gets that, but then it has like another one behind it that gets the
little
space around
yeah,
a bit too. So it's like cardioid pattern is pretty wide and it, you know, it's stereo, even just with one of them, but then you can add up to four. I bought two of them so I could just to see, you know, and it's pretty good. It's funny that there's clearly like a black sheep. One of them always takes longer to connect and do its stuff than the other one. It's like just got the slightly crappier Bluetooth chip or something.
Yeah, it's the one behind. I was in a conversation with the airline pilot yesterday, and this guy answered this weird question. He's like, you know, on the Warthog A-10s, you know, like, and the guy's like, yeah, I know those planes, you know, and I'm like, what's going on? But they're like, you know, somebody on a forum was saying like the engines become out of sync, right? Like your left and right, you know, jets or whatever. And so like, you have to like throttle them differently or whatever. Like, and I just was like, that is something I've never considered in my whole entire life. Like an engine with like 1,000 hours and an engine with like 2,000 hours, like they would behave differently in the sky. Dude, that's a lot of action. I don't want to do that. Pairing Bluetooth is fine. Yeah. I'll limit my challenges to pairing Bluetooth. But anyway,
we got a good question here, an audio question. That's a thing you can do, people. Listen up to Aru.
Hi, Dave and Chris. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I've been blogging for a while. The Python-based static site generator I'm currently using got out of my way, supported a large range of document formats, and was easy to hack on. Recently, I upgraded my laptop and tried getting my blogging environment back up and running. Everything was old enough that I had all the stumbling blocks, dealing with an end-of-life version of Python, needing to upgrade Node, locating missing dependencies, etc. Upgrading to the latest version of the static site generator would require me to update my theme quite a bit. Since my theme is old, it uses less, for example, if you remember that, I think I need to declare bankruptcy and author a new theme from scratch. I was thinking that, while I'm at it, I should see what the state of the art is in static site generator land. In my research, I stumbled upon 11D support for WebC. The web component-like ergonomics and compile-time ACID bundling are intriguing. Since WebC is relatively new and 11T is the only generator that uses it, it's pretty challenging finding in-depth reviews or perspectives on it. I was curious if y'all have used WebC before and have any thoughts. Thanks.
Let's take part one there. Oh, bummer, dude. That just sucks. That's like the story as old as time with web development stuff. You're like, oh, I didn't touch this at all for a long time, and now it just doesn't work. I just think that sucks.
It's digital entropy, man. Bits rot when they just sit, you know? Everything gets worse just by sitting.
I would like to solve that in my career, so working on it. In my research, I stumbled upon 11D support for WebC, the component-like ergonomics and compile-time ACID bundling are intriguing. Since WebC is relatively new and 11T is the only generator that uses it, it's pretty challenging to find in-depth reviews or perspectives on it. I was curious if y'all have used WebC before and have thoughts. Thanks. That's Zach's thing. He's the 11D guy and the WebC guy. I know that Zach personally doesn't like the above thing. He's trying not to have, you know what I mean? Like, just as a person, he's a guy that you could probably count on to attempt to not break your crap over time. And I think that goes a long way. I think that's cool. But it still could happen easily happen. You leave an 11D site for 3 years. Is it going to work? I would think there'll be a problem. You know, I have that feeling. That's not, no proof of that, but still, it's Node. So Node trucks on.
Yeah.
The Node 22 release is crazy, by the way. Did you see it? Now you can require ESM.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Which, cool, that's, guys.
yeah, a little late, but we'll take it, you know? Like, yeah. Fixes all kinds of crap. All right. So have you seen WebC? I've never built anything in it. I have a little gripe that it's like it looks like a web component framework, but is not one, you know, but you do use it in the same kind of vibe, like make little repeatable things. So it's a piece of cool technology, but whatever, you know, like sure, use it. I have mostly thumbs up to give it.
I mean, I would say like the lifetime of an 11D site is going to be better than your Python site. I'm of course speculating, but 11D has a really big and broad community. So I think that's part of like, how does something stay alive, you know? But I've definitely been bitten by this like dependency upgrade situation. So it's definitely bad. WebC is cool. It's inspired by web components, which are a web standard. So it tries to mimic that, but do it in a way that you actually get more statically generated code than you would from a web component. Like a web component actually just is going to be all JavaScript on the client by default. Or if you, or if you, whatever, figure out a way to transpile out the declarative shadow DOM, then it can like kind of server render and then mount later, hydrate later. WebC is going to try to push as much to being a statically rendered component as possible. It's very similar to the Astro.Astro format, you know, although .Astro is a little more powerful, perhaps, because you can just hot load React components or whatever you want inside of there. But I think so.
It is, but then, it's also more opinionated, right? Whereas the WebC is like, you can do literally anything with HTML in there, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Whatever. It's just an HTML file.
Yep. It's just like an HTML file, basically. And so, and then you put your JavaScript, your CSS, and it'll auto scope your CSS for you, like using CSS modules.
It does that too.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. So, and then it'll, it actually deduplicates too, I think. So if it's like knows that you have like one, like if you did a for loop for cards or something, my card, it'll like deduplicate all the CSS. So, that it needs to do. So that's kind of cool. I think that's the case. I'd have to verify that. But last time I did, it was true, but it could have changed. But the...
Like it's not going to... It injects a style block of the scope styles. It's not going to do that four times for your four cards.
Yeah, exactly. So it'll just put one and it'll hoist it up to the top, I think. So that's cool as well. So, so that's cool that it does that. I think the way I hedge against this is like, because I think that's the issue. It's not so much like frameworks update. Like we want frameworks to update, right? But like, how do you not get surprised is maybe the question. Like, how do I not get sidewinded by all these updates, you know? And for me, it's like less moving parts is a huge part of it, right? Like, do you understand what's going on in the process? You know, like when 11D runs, do you understand what it does? My understanding of it is it takes a layout and takes a content and stitches that together and plus whatever else you junk you put on top of it. And so if you understand the model of how it's generating stuff, then yeah, it should be easier to upgrade and update. And you always kind of want to be doing less in static land, in my opinion. But
right. Yeah, I generally like that it's an answer to building websites these days. We grew up as an industry and we figured out that the way to do it is componentry. Mm-hmm. It took a minute to get there. Believe it or not, we just didn't do that so much. We would just like kind of author HTML and let it just kind of come together how it comes together. Less than thinking of like, this is this kind of component and I'm going to make everything a component and I'm going to piece it all together as components. I think we've been like, that's the right way to do it. Maybe we can rub the shoulders of JavaScript frameworks and be like, thanks for that, because the ESM model really contributed to that working nicely. But it doesn't mean that we have to use them to take advantage of this, and things like WebC prove that. You can be like, no, you can, there's other ways to build componentry and piece it together and not rely so hard on JavaScript at all, let alone client-side JavaScript.
I think 11D is worth looking at. Astro is worth looking at. Another one I'd throw in there is Enhance,
which
you write everything as a web component, but it's kind of like through their sort of API to write web components, which isn't bad. It's just that's, I think, the limitation. I could be wrong on that too, but that's my understanding, is you have to kind of use their web component sort of tooling. But it's very intuitive in how it pieces together. And you know,
you'd almost like to see them get together, wouldn't you? Like, they're just so similar, but different enough that you're like, oh, I think your powers combined would be better.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I use Jekyll, man, and it's still running. Setting up a Ruby environment is not fun, but, you know,
Still probably pretty popular. Just it was like the OG static site generator kind of. Ruby's the only problem, but you're like, why is it though? It's just slowness, really. But you're like, dude, if it works for Dave's blog, who probably blogs more than you do,
probably works for you too. I mean, there's nitpicks I have that, you know, I saw somebody the other day was saying, Ruby 3.3 over 3.2 is like 3x faster or 30% faster or something. So
yeah, Ruby gets better too.
So Ruby's gotten better, and you know, that might break some stuff. I know on the last computer update, I broke some stuff, and so, but it was like, you know, it wasn't world wrecking to dig out of. You know, it was just like, oh man, we've got everybody's mad now. And it was the classic debug it by turning everything off and then like commenting everything out and then kind of layering it back in, and we figured it out. So it was like some SaaS thing that was mad. So
nothing's forever anyway. You know, it's like your blog post, Dave's, is a bunch of markdown files and all these other things that we've mentioned, Astro 11D web, you know, enhance and stuff. They're perfectly fine sucking in markdown files and doing, not that it's not going to be no work, but you'd be able to figure it out. Like at least the core of it is pretty similar. And even if it was harder, it's like, even that's not for, we just had Matt Howey on, was like, I just switched from, you know, WordPress to Ghost or whatever, which by all accounts was way harder, you know, totally different database structures and CLI commands and migrating assets and stuff. That's going to suck compared to, I'd much rather move a static site generator to a different one.
One, yeah, it's how motivated are you, you know, like, I mean, definitely like, it's your site, it's your blog, or if you want a blog, that's awesome. But even just having your personal site so people know who you are and know what you've worked on, and like a little business card is super valuable. It's definitely probably worth a weekend of your life to get up and going, you know? So sure. That's what I'd say.
I do think it would be nice to never have to make a technological choice unless you want to.
It would be cool if you could had some sort of machine or system that showed you exactly what was happening, sort of like a step-by-step you know, way to visualize that.
But well, speaking of dependencies, just at CodePen, we were using Yarn. That's what was an early choice. We're like, we're gonna use Yarn, because there was that period of time where Yarn was the good one.
Yep, NPM and then bad, just, Yarn good, right?
Yeah, kind of. It was just faster. It had this like, I can install a package from local cache or whatever. But it also had workspaces, and that's mono repo friendly, you know, we were kind of, that came later for us, but it was convenient. That's why we never switched off of it. Cause it was like, oh, thanks Yarn. You got our back here. Even Yarn 1, which was released in 2016, 2017, little old, you know, and then, you know, we've told this story before, but, you know, then NPM got more better, arguably better. And it's certainly more with the grain, because like, dude, you install Node, which everybody has, and then you get NPM too. One less dependency in a way, kind of nice. But we never switched. We were just on Yarn 1 forever, and it started to feel old. I mention it now because there's PNPM is another player in this world and has gotten a lot of, it just feels like it's getting popular, like right now.
It has positive sentiment for sure, where NPM doesn't necessarily have that.
I think for developers who bounce around projects a lot, it's particularly cool, because you like start building up this local cache on your computer, and then you're like, I'm working on this, and then I'm working on that, and switching to this, and switching to that. It's like, it'll be smoking fast for you. Anyway, so, but, you know, it finally started to show its age enough that we're like, we're going to switch. And even just yarn one to yarn two is whack. It's super duper different. So I think that's why so many people are on yarn one, is that it was like a massive change. And we're like, let's just go all the way. We'll just upgrade to yarn four, which is their latest release. And it's just mega different, you know. It uses this thing called Core Pack, which is kind of like a, you have to, you say in your package.json which thing you're going to use. Like, we're using yarn. But it's somehow so low level on your machine that once you've enabled Core Pack, like, everything is Core Pack. So it's,
yeah.
It's a little tricky. But it's really strict about your dependencies too. So when you switch to something that cares more, there's this idea that, like, you know, monorepo, you can, dependencies kind of bubble their way to the top, and like you can have like what you might call a ghost dependency, whereas some import statement in some project just kind of works because Node found it at the top. So it just doesn't yell at you.
Yeah.
But really, you're like, you're totally missing that package in this actual project where you want it, which might be deployed independently and ultimately cause you problems. So Yarn 4 was really much stricter about that kind of stuff. So that was nice for us. But also just little stuff like the CLI, it just looks nicer, you know, stuff like that. You know, Astro has a release and you're like, ooh, the spinny rocket ship. I like it. You know?
Yeah. A few more colors.
That feels good.
That's good.
It has this interactive upgrade mode too. Have you ever been like, so how do you like I have 15 dependencies in this package.json and they're all out of date. Mm. How do I upgrade them?
Yeah.
Like somehow NPM just never had a way to do that. You had to like download another package to do it.
Yeah, it has npm outdated, which tells you what's outdated, but it doesn't give you a path to do it. It's just kind of like, here's all the old stuff, you know, and it even has like alpha versions in there and stuff that you're probably not going to upgrade to. And so
yeah, Yarn has this interactive upgrade mode now too, so you just kick it on and it has like this wizard that kind of walks you through what to update and kind of helps you do it. So that was a big upgrade for us. And I also thought notably, and this is, I'm crediting my coworker Robert here, who kind of did the bulk of this work. It was not particularly easy job getting everything to be perfect for a thing like this. Is that it's like the most capable. Like if you like the PNPM approach, you can just tell Yarn 4 to like be like PNPM. Like do that thing, cache style. And it has its own special one called plug and play. And if you like that, then you can just be like, well, then do the plug and play kind, or like behave like NPM or whatever. You can just like flip the switch to have it behave like your favorite type of package manager.
Huh.
So like to me, that makes it kind of a winner.
That's
in a
actually,
way.
Yeah, if it can kind of do all of them, that's cool. That's interesting. I mean, you're just like, what, it took like a week or something, like the whole sprint to upgrade that?
It was longer. But it was not the only thing it was doing. It was just one developer. So, I mean, you know, eventually we all got roped in for different little parts of it. But that was worth it. When you have some embarrassing part of your stack and then that goes away, feels very good.
Well, but just like to Aru's point, like you know, you decide we're going to pay down the technical debt, we're going to upgrade something, and it's 1 week of your time, maybe, you know, to friggin' get it back going to be the exact same as it was the day before, you know, maybe a few, tangential benefits.
But. Yeah, that's the idea, is that ideally with sometimes this type of work, what you want is nobody to notice anything.
Right.
You didn't break anything.
For infrastructure work, you want no services to be disrupted, but yeah.
And then we got some bonus stuff, like the way that it handles cache is just so much more efficient. There was a 25-second part of our CI. Build?
Oh, geez, yeah.
Which went to 5 seconds. So, you know, we got 20 seconds back of a CI build, which is like, good.
Oh, well, you know? Well, if it's 5 minutes and 6 minutes, that's a big difference to me. Like, I can maybe wait around for 5 minutes. I'm out at 6 minutes, you know?
Yeah, that kind of stuff is a is a big deal to me. You know, like I want all feedback loops to be as close to 0 seconds as possible.
That's actually something I've been reading about lately. Just the idea of prototyping and stuff like that is just like short feedback loops, like make the world go round, you know, and like how can you shorten any feedback loop is kind of just where my brain is gravitates.
Absolutely.
To. Like
any one of them.
Wes and Scott over at Syntax did a show on like, how do you prototype an idea or like, you know,
I listened to that this
around?
Morning.
Yeah.
How strange
yeah.
is that?
Yeah. You know, I wanted them to get into some more meat, you know, of like exactly what they're doing, you know, but, I thought it was a good episode, but,
I thought they were flattering to CodePen. So thanks, boys.
That was very nice.
But
yeah.
They mentioned a couple other ones, Observable HQ. They talked about Valtown, which is actually pretty cool, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. They were very flattering of CodePen, but, and that's actually part of my ethos as well, is just like, if I can do it in a code pen, I've like saved myself hours and hours of work. Right. And so, but
from
yeah,
a business perspective that I keep that in mind. Like, it's funny to hear that from people where they're like, if I can do it in code, but I will.
Yeah.
But then if I can't, I go elsewhere, you know, I'm like, oh, really? Do you say that?
Pourquoi?
Are you saying we should do more things? Can do.
Okay. We'll get it going.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's like, but it's just that idea of like, I've been kind of thinking like, you know, I've had a few ideas, but I kind of like, you know, worked on Luro for so long, like that was a very Vue 2, you know, situation. Like I was kind of like, oh, what's my like workshop now? Like if I was like setting up a workshop from scratch, what would I use? You know, CodePen's a big piece of it, but you know, I'm kind of just like web components and, you know, which Wes and Scott talked about, but like web components and, you know, Vite or something like that would get me a very long way. So I need to kind of maybe experiment on like, how do I spin something up? Or if I were to like hack a design system or build out some idea or something like that, what would I use? And
yeah,
I don't have a real great answer right now. Do you know what I mean? So, or I'm not happy with my answer right now, you know, just like, I'm gonna
right, which is notable for you, somebody who's so already bought into this idea of prototyping is the most important thing ever.
Yeah, I just for me, it's just it has a I'm noticing a hole in my production suite. Does that make sense? Like a
Mr. Simi DeClercq writes in, friend of the show, of course. They're kind of wondering about monetization or the commercialization of open source, like how, when do profit seeking companies open source stuff and when do they not do that? Open source is amazing. It feels so good intuitively. It has so many advantages. Others can audit it. They can extend it, contribute back, fork if they want, go a different direction, yada, yada. Just watch the Node documentary. That happened.
Yeah.
You remember? I remember the drama.
IOJS.
It's been a while since I've thought about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was wild. But it comes with risk. People could clone your stuff and use it themselves. So yada, yada. Like, would you ever open source your products like entirely like CodePen or Luro? And then how do you think about this decision? Another podcast to listen to, I think on what it was like JS Party or something, they had the Zed people on, you know, Zed, the new editor.
Mm-hmm.
The VS Code world. See how that works out. I wouldn't doubt that they do very well with themselves, but they open sourced some of it or something. Or am I, do I have that wrong? I listened to a really good debate on one of those, probably a changelog or something, of somebody that like open sourced some of their stuff, but they didn't use, apparently, I didn't even know this. This is how ignorant I am of the open source, like has this very like dictionary definition. Mm-hmm. You know that? Like you have to use one of these very specific licenses. And if you do, like one of them is MIT, I'm sure. And GPL is probably one of them. I don't know. But if you don't use one of those exact ones, then you're not technically open source then. You might be a viewable source. You might have like source that you can see and contribute to, but it's not technically open source. And they were having this big debate about it because this company was like, well, we use this license that's like pretty much open source, except it has this one caveat in it that you can't fork it and then compete with us.
Mm.
And like, because that was the case, then they're not technically open source and they can't use that word.
Huh. Interesting. So I see a post called Zed is now open source. So on their blog from earlier this year. So
yeah.
Jeep, but it's a mix, mishmash of a potpourri of licenses. So it's GPL for the editor, AGPL, which I think is Apache GPL. Is that right? For the server side components, GPUI, the UI framework that powers Zed is Apache 2. And so they're mostly, I would say these qualify as the open source versions.
Yeah, it wasn't that. It was the Git Butler guy.
Did I mention that show on here?
It's a super weird Git client that has potential, but they open sourced some of it, but not with that weird caveat of not being able to compete, which honestly I kind of like. And I don't love the how do you say, the pedanticness of, you're like, dude, the code's on GitHub. They want community and contributions. There's one little caveat that says you can't take this and then make Git Butler 2 and sell it online. Like, that seems fine. How is that not open source? But it's not. And the, you know,
right.
It was the changelog guys that were really pushing back on that idea that we can't just like change the definition of open source, which I respect. I just like from a practical standpoint was like, well, do whatever.
Okay. Know? Hardliners. No, well, doesn't OpenAI have the same problem? Like Musk is suing them because they say they're open source, but they are not open. Like I do not have the weights and measurements for OpenAI on my computer.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Nope, sure don't. Interesting stuff. Like, so would I ever open source all of CodePen? No, probably not. You know, the early decision not to was mostly because of like, there's so much like billing code all up in every aspect of this thing that it's like, it's not that the billing code is secret. It's that it's not useful to you.
Sure, sure.
You know, it's like, it's just weird. It's like just so integrated into all of it. So I'm like, I think, you know, could we have done a better job of like breaking off pieces of it that don't have any of that stuff in there? Probably. And, you know, for example, there is a CodePen 2.0 coming. You know, if anybody's like really itching to see it, definitely reach out. I'll get you on my alpha and beta testing list. Happy to show it. But there's a piece of it that, you know, tentatively the compiler, you know, we'll probably name it something cool, that is very fancy. It just can do a lot of stuff. And like, there's a possibility, I don't guarantee it, but it is our desire, at least at the moment, to eventually open source that piece of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I want to, because I want to give back and take all the advantages that you laid out, like the, you know, the security stuff and the extensions and the helping and stuff. But it's not easy. It's not something I necessarily want to start with because it does have business implications. One of which I think is anything I've ever seen a company open source rots and it has 500 issues on GitHub and nobody ever touches and it actually makes you look dumb.
Well, it builds, it has the opposite effect, right? It builds malice in the community, not joy, right?
Right.
Yeah, we've been pressured actually by investors to open source pieces of Lura. But they're,
really?
Well, just because it turns out, Chris, it's a marketing tool. Like you get hearts and stars on GitHub. Guess what? Other investors might want to invest, you know? But we have also like, there's not a clear snap, like you're saying. Like there's either billing code or it's like, cool, I can give this to you, but it costs like $500 to run. Do you want it or do you just want to pay me $50? Like you tell me, like to have a Lura up and running costs $500 a month. I can tell you that for a fact. Like, so like, do you want to incur that cost? You're so passionate. Or do you want to just pay me $50 a month? Because I'll take your $50. That would be better, you know? So I don't understand the benefit there. You know, there may be pieces that we do and, you know, could yoink out, but it's so.
And then you got to be ready, man. You got to be ready. Somebody's got to be in charge of that.
Well, that's my other thing is like, you know, the idea of an open source play is like, okay, cool. That's a full-time business. Like, that's a full-time job. Like you look at like people like Patak or whatever who works on Vite, right? Like full-time doing that, right? Like it's not fun to work on open source. It's like borderline abusive. So like, I don't think I would just do it for fun or good vibes. Like I would have to know what I'm doing it for. So
right. And if it's marketing, which is super valuable, then so be it.
You know? Right. And so my thing would be like, I think it's, I think we would not do Luro just because like, I don't think it really provides you value to be able to run it locally. Or it's expensive to get up and going by yourself.
Right.
But then I would also say like it, you know, I think like we don't have this resourcing, and I'm including myself here. Dave, the resource does not have the resourcing to like openly maintain it. You know, that's like two jobs for me. So
right. That's an all or nothing, though. It's kind of interesting. I wonder if, you know, if you open source the whole thing, I would guess that you'd get less stars than you would if you broke off the like Figma component scraper matcher machine and you put that on GitHub. Then people would be like, "Ooh, a Figma component scraper matcher machine. I'm gonna use that."
We totally could do that, but that's also kind of bespoke to our model that we have imported your components and you know and so.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think like we could probably like you're saying like. Pull out pieces of it and do that. But then, you know, that becomes kind of a bit of a maintenance burden. So, I don't know. We're, it's not a closed door, but it's just
open source is horrible. Simi, why would you?
What I would like open source or want to open source, you know, like we've done like a lot of like, you know, something like a Lighthouse report or something like that. Like, you know, maybe I could do something where like you drag a Lighthouse JSON onto a web page and we like put it in a human presentable format that makes sense to you and lets you dig into, or maybe it's a folder full of Lighthouses that then like boils it all down or something into like, cool. You can see like all your issues across all your pages or whatever. But again, at that point, if you have a folder full of JSONs for Lighthouses, why'd you do that? You should have just used Luro. I'm sorry. Just keep coming back to that. Why? It's 2 minutes per page. Luro could have done that.
Fair enough. Yeah, I you know, some things don't have a choice. I don't think a closed source Vite would go anywhere.
Yeah.
If it was some binary you had to download and open up and your code went through a black box, nobody's going to use that. I mean, I kind of say that, and I use, for example, like Local by Flywheel or whatever to run my WordPress sites, which to me is a black box, but it's fine.
Yeah.
I see WordPress release their studio yesterday. So WordPress.com released a local web development frameworky thing. I have been using it for a month or so. It's sweet.
Oh,
it's
yeah?
free.
Okay.
It runs WordPress on any platform, and it does it with the like SQLite thing, you know? So it doesn't even spin up MySQL. That's not even a dependency of the thing. And it runs PHP and WASM. So it's like just smoking fast local WordPress sites. And they did it because I feel like they were kind of like forced into it in a way because they wanted to have really cool developer features, including like deploy from GitHub, which I think is just crucial for a WordPress host to have which they want to be. And then you're like, cool, I can push from GitHub. How do you expect me to run this thing locally? Like, what's the story? You have to have some docs explaining it. And if those docs are like, use MAMP or worse, use my competitor's product, that's not cool. But of course, the stars aligned for them, as they often do. And this PHP WASM thing became a reality and SQLite became cool and whatever. So I think it's a badass move.
Why does WordPress hate its buddies? Like, isn't WP Engine, Local Flywheel, like, aren't they friends? Like, maybe this is getting into the hot drama portion of the show, but like,
it is an interesting question.
Doesn't that boost the ecosystem? Why would you like cannibalize somebody?
I think it does, but it doesn't mean that you don't compete though.
Yeah.
I don't think you hate them, but you still compete kind of thing. I don't know, especially because you sell Jetpack. Jetpack is expensive, and you only even need it if you're not on WordPress.com.
Yeah.
Like, it brings those features to other sites. So, like, the more other sites there are, the more Jetpack you're going to sell.
Yeah.
Which is also funny.
I just feel like, yeah, I guess, like, they have money to worry about. But, I like, if my dependent, my son, Otis, said, hey, Dad, I have an idea for a video game.
Yeah.
I want to make it. And it's like, cool, son. And then I make it. I'm a bad dad. Like if I make it behind his back, I'd call it mine. Or I just copy what video game my son made and like mm-hmm. call it mine. I'm a bad dad. I'm a bad parent. I'm a bad steward of ideas, community ideas. So
perhaps
don't want to thank you WordPress for sponsoring the show. But anyway, I'd
love Automatic Back sponsoring. Come on home.
I just wonder why you, I guess maybe you do it to sponsor podcasts, but what motivations is there to like copy versus do something totally different that isn't sort of community covered, you know? So, but the deploy by Git thing that.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, to call, I don't know if local is community. If we're scoping it to just that, I mean, because I think you're speaking more broadly of all kinds of different things, and there's probably sure. a lot of stuff we could put in these buckets, but I don't know. I think it's to have never up until now had an opinionated way that says this is how you run WordPress locally is crazy to me. Crazy. Like, how did it get so popular without barely even a docs page saying how to do it?
They are 20 years into the WordPress project, at least. Dude. And that is wild.
Well, congratulations to Melanie, who became the kind of the lead accessibility person at all of HashiCorp recently, yeah. right? Huge job, a friend of the show. She does incredible work with accessibility. Ember has entered the podcast. And, but does, you know, I mean, just the other day I saw her make a pen about, you know, the popover is kind of coming to HTML and CSS. She's like, I'm going to look into this. You know, that's just her nature, which mm-hmm. I think is super cool. And then, and then only we wake up today to have IBM buys HashiCorp. So hopefully that the stocks for you went through before that.
Yeah, hopefully you're vested and that feels good.
Oh my God. But IBM, like what does IBM even do? I just, I see the word IBM and I'm just like, oh, boring.
They're connecting enterprise to the social global village economy. Chris, what, you don't know that? And
I literally don't even know how I could give them money. I mean, I know it's not, I'm not enterprise, so it's not for me, but I'm like, what is the, it's just buzzwords and stuff. I literally don't get it.
Yeah. I think it's, I think they, as I understand, I have a few friends that work at IBM. They do great work. Okay. But a lot of it, I think, is sort of enterprise contracts. Like, we have to build this admin dashboard for, like, managing our shipping and stuff like that. And we don't, okay. like, know who to talk to. And guess what? We're going to talk to IBM, you know? Or, like, but, you know, and it's not, like, small peanuts. It's like, on the scale of billions of orders or what, a SAP
so who
or something.
Did they build it for you then?
Yeah, too? They build it for you and build you a little dashboard admin local thing. And, you know, I'm sure they could even build, like, your whole business and app. But, you know, like, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of, like, oil money or something. I don't know. I'm speculating. But just, you know, people who are, like...
Do I not know this stuff? Because what I'm like, can I host, like, my Astro site on anything that IBM sells or not? They
don't
care about
so.
Me.
I mean, no, they don't. They probably have, like, a cloud thing, but you'd have to talk to somebody on a phone to get it going or something. So,
oh, wow. They're that. They are just pure enterprise.
I think so. I think it's handshakes and... firm handshakes yeah. and stuff like that. But, you know, why would they buy HashiCorp? You know, Ansible is a big thing. Terraform is a big thing. I'm sure they use those products like quite a bit, you know? So, I mean, those are pretty enterprise grade things. So I'm sure they're kind of using all that stuff for building and managing these products that they're building for people and enterprises. And so maybe it was just kind of like a, hey, we're, I always think there's some math that somebody does, you know, whether it's DigitalOcean buying CSS Tricks or whoever. It's just like they just sit down or Sentry buying Syntax, you know. It's just like somebody sits down and says like, okay, who I'm going to spend this much money over this many years advertising or doing, you know, using these tools. So it might just be cheaper to own the technology, you know, or something like that. So it might just be more... make more sense
I'm
for
sure
us
it makes
to
sense on paper for sure
yeah you I mean, but does it always work? I don't, not necessarily, but you know, and
yeah.
Anyway, so that's, I feel like there's a motivation, but HashiCorp recently did kind of an open source stinker, not to, what in the fact that like they,
that was licensing based too, wasn't it?
Yeah. They took, Terraform, they changed the license, I think, to BSD or something like that, you know, or from, and so people got mad, but not quite as mad as the same trick where whoever took Redis and made it, or Redis, I guess, made Redis not open source or something like that. And so.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So.
But all of it?
Yeah. Like... Yeah. But, you know, and I think too, Redis is probably like, hey, we have this thing. Amazon's just selling Redis, you know,
well, and making money. We used Redis, the company, for a little bit. And then we're like, oh, it's on AWS. Oh, that's way easier. We're going to
So I have no insight into nothing. But like Tech Pundit Dave is like, absolutely, right? Like they just are like, no, F you pay me. Like just we need some kind of money from somebody to, if like Amazon's going to build a whole product that just uses our product, like we need to like make some money. So,
yeah, I wonder what happens now. Is our Amazon Redis in jeopardy?
Well, I bet Amazon has enough money to procure some licenses, you know, so or whatever it is.
Perhaps, so. Or just buy them.
Yeah.
Can we own you now? Although we'll see, because, you know, the tech is can be finicky, right? Like now that this is the case, I've seen some headlines that were like, you know, the fight for what the next Redis is on. Kind of, because if you see this happening in the background and you're the DevOps person or whatever at some company, are you going to pick Redis? Or are you going to look at what the new hotness is? You're going to look at what the new hotness is. Maybe. I mean, you know, Redis is kind of old and boring in a good way, you know? So sometimes people pick it just based on that. But if you think there's turmoil, why not use some kind of new thing?
Yeah. Yeah. There's you know, there's other, you know, alternatives. We used Cloud AMPQ, which is RabbitMQ servers, which is like a message queue tool. It's cool. It's like Redis with a few features, like a few admin features. So you can kind of visualize your queues and see what's going on, see who's dying, you know, stuff like that. So errors, rejections, blah, blah, blah. So I recommend that.
Cool. Well, I hope everybody got their taxes in on time or filed extensions. You know, good for you. It's been a number of years where my taxes were just a little too complicated for, I just wanted somebody else to handle it. So it's been years of doing that. But after the sale of CSS Tricks and that this just, I just had a pretty boring year. It's like, I don't freelance. I pretty much just had like a W-2 from CodePen.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm not going to pay this company $6,000 or whatever the hell they're charging me to do my taxes. So that seems crazy now. Not to mention, they just did an absolute terrible job of my 2022 taxes that I'm literally still mopping up, and I'm very salty about it. So this year, I was like, I'm going to use what the rest of the American public uses, which is TurboTax.
Yeah.
And it was awesome. I'm like, what a nice piece of software. They make
really
an incredible amount of money as a company, I'm sure, doing this, since your captive audience is all people in this country anyway, you know. They've done shady stuff, so I'm not trying to whitewash over that. They're like, you know, they have to offer a free version. They make that really hard to find. You know, they did SEO tricks to hide it, yada, yada. Like, that's all bad stuff. But as far as like a pure like rating, like how is it like to use that software? It's great. It's super nice. No wonder people use it.
I love that you turned into the TurboTax evangelist. This is great.
I just was like, hey, I haven't used software this well prepared.
What did it cost you? Because that's going to be what it sells.
Bucks.
Oh my God, maybe I need to do that. I'm trying to get hard. I'm working very hard to get out of the tax hell that I've dug for myself. So
yeah, I mean, did I do it perfectly? Are some people out there moaning and groaning that you're like, did you do your deductions correctly? I mean, blah blah blah. You know, I don't know. I don't know, but it went fine. And I got a refund. So there.
Wow. Wow. That's a miracle. That's a word I haven't heard in years. So,
it was a good year to sell a company to the state of Oregon for this year. Had a tax kicker where it was like 10% of last year's taxes you got back. They just write you a check back for it. So like
of all the
as
years,
far as a year to sell a company for, that was an excellent year to sell a company.
You had like the right capital gains thing. Yeah. Oh man, I was at a party the other day and my good friend pulls me aside and says, "Hey, my friend knows how to like get a bunch of money back on your taxes." And I just was like, "No, dude, I'm out. No way, dude." He just was like, a friend of his had cooked up a scheme to like get, you know, apparently it works or whatever, but to get a bunch of money back. And I'm like, "Okay, that's cool, but I am not in the interest of complicating my taxes, even if it costs me like tens of thousands."
I heard there's
of
a whole TikTok phenomenon of this, like with like bad tricks.
Oh, really?
For your taxes, you know, like there's a certain kind of enormous car you can buy that's a write off. That's a little trick.
Ooh, all right.
It was just a pretty good Planet Money episode where they debunk or confirm dumb TikTok tax stuff.
Ooh, what if I buy that big nice Mercedes Winnebago? Right. And then I make a TikTok. And so now it's a content expense. Right.
Right. So. Oh, a content expense. See, that's good because their caveat was like, this is actually true, but you like do actually need to use it for business.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm making a TikTok 60-second video for sure. Of my $130,000 Winnebago for sure. For sure.
Well, we've got log a little bit. I'm going to do Russell Heimlich's one, though. You set this in a while ago. It's just kind of a PSA announcement that if you know the colon selection thing in CSS where you can set a color. So if you're like, I want to use my brand color when you select text, which I think is just kind of a cool thing you can
do. It's a flex. It's a flex.
It's a flex. And now accent color you can do, too, that makes like your checkboxes orange or whatever if you want to. It's a nice little flex. I think it's pretty neat. But you can do like background color yellow, and it's a nice, vibrant yellow. Safari will be like, no, you're not. Won't let you do it. Russell's trick is to use yellow at like 0.99 alpha opacity. Ooh. And then Safari is like, okay, that's fine, which is basically yellow. So rock and
nice.
Roll.
Hacks. That's good.
Indeed.
Way to break the system, Russell. Good job. So, all right. Well, we should wrap it up here. We're at time. Yep. I'm Dave. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast and your podcatchers. Be sure to start our favorite up. That's how people find out about the show. Follow us on Mastodon because that's the cool one. But where the real cool people are is in the Discord. Join us there, patreon.com/shoptalkshow. Chris, you got anything else you'd like to say?
shoptalkshow.com.